When we last left our heroes, they were locked into a terribly important discussion. Let's drop in on them again as they plot the future. Now, from the Top Dog's Kennel in beautiful downtown Burbank, it's the Terrence and Phillip Show.
Well, thank you very much, Gary. God, I love that open. Okay. Though I've had people go, oh, come on, why couldn't you get the real Gary?
It's the real Gary.
That's the point.
Yes. I guess people are a little bit... haven't recognized the fact that the Gary is not quite as young, and
yeah,
as we get older, our vocal cords get longer and less powerful. But well, still the original and the best.
And the best, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm Terrence Curran.
And I'm Phillip Hodgett.
With the Terrence and Phillip Show. Sure.
Yes.
So today, the subject we're going to talk about is what we both kind of believe is the future, though I'm not really ecstatically happy about it. So what's the technical name for it?
For the second time in the recordings, we're going with a new piece of terminology, and the terminology is transmedia. It's the new word for what I think I called 10 years ago multimedia.
Okay. Or
in between, it might have been called hypermedia. It's the idea not only of interactive entertainment, but extending a story and primarily allowing your audience to participate in the story.
A little bit more, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit more. So it may have a game component. It can also be an enormous amount of work and can fly up in your face. There is a transmedia meetup group in LA that I've been to once and hope to get back to.
Are they like digit heads or...?
They're all over the place.
Okay.
People who are already doing this, the speakers at the one I went to, whose names are going to forget, I'd have to look it up online, had a very, very successful transmedia project back in the day. But they were talking about that they'd spent like 3 months preparing, well, 6-8 months preparing all the material for what they thought were going to be 3 months of activities for participants and everything. And it was something like 3 days before it was all consumed. So,
to
back up and work out what we're talking about is,
yeah. Here's because I've had some experience with this recently, and I can, which is why I'm a believer in this is where things are going now. This has to do with the multi-screen viewing environment that is now becoming the norm. It's very typical for a minimum of a 3-screen viewing environment to occur. What they've found in studies is that people are not spending any less time in front of their television sets now, even though broadcast viewership has gone down. Other areas have gone up. But the bottom line is people still are in front of their TVs. But what they're doing now is, they'll have the television on, they'll have the iPad in their hand or laptop or whatever that they're doing stuff on. They have their phone open for text messaging next to them, et cetera. And I've watched my older son and daughter in their late 20s doing that just recently at my house. And I was like, that's amazing. He's not even looking at the screen watching the movie that's on. And when I first brought this up to Phillip, he's like, yeah, he says, movies are boring. They don't even keep my attention. So, this is the new universe. You know, we're now fighting for attention when we do something if we think we're putting it only on one screen. So the question becomes, and this is what Phillip's talking about, is the amount of work involved.
That may be our salvation.
It is potentially, yes, because there's huge potential now because, forget 3D. 3D I'm sorry, it's another cycle. It's a fad. It's stupid. But this is true 3D in that, you can be sitting here watching a movie, let's say, on TV, and something really catches your attention, like a location or something, which is now – since you're following along on your iPad, you can hit on that and get more detail on the location. You could even book a stay there, You're watching a reality show and you wonder, I wonder how many cameras get destroyed when they're shooting this show. You could sit there and bam, go into it, and all of a sudden you're playing on your laptop, various behind-the-scenes videos of cameras getting trashed, et cetera. And each of those presents another advertising opportunity too. So if, even though there's not an ad currently on the television, now when they're looking at the video of the camera being destroyed, there's a Sony ad down in the corner or something. So this kind of interactivity, and like you were saying, even with games, let's say, you can get involved in a game that comes from the movie that you're watching on the screen, da, 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 da. All of that presents opportunities that we haven't even thought of yet to do it. Mm-hmm. But it is an amazing amount of work because it's a 3D space, a true 3D space now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because what you're doing here on this laptop in front of you has to correlate in some way, shape, or form to that big screen back there. while they're not really truly directly connected, and mapping all of that out just boggles my mind. I mean, that's, you know, that's like designing a – well, it's like designing a program, I guess, or designing
– I'm actually sitting here thinking, there's got to be an opportunity there.
Yeah.
Because in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, of course, we need all these different iterations of programming and ancillary programming, and none of our current tools are really set up.
How do you
even write an interactive program?
I have no idea.
I had this great – oh, gosh, this is going back, I'm sure, 97, 98. I had this great hyperlinkable interactive – It was great because you could create links and new story space. It was called Story Space.
Okay.
And it allowed you to write interactive stories and keep the links and the threads going. And I thought it was fascinating. And I really thought that that was the direction that we were going to go with film and television. And we see that there's a movie called Mind, M-Y-N-D. It was written up in Variety on July 30th. And it puts headsets on the audience. And based on the emotions that they pull from the headset,
Okay, so it's not covering your ears, it's like sensing.
It's just like sensor on your head.
Headgear. Okay, this is pretty weird.
Yeah. Well,
sorry.
Yeah.
it's kind of scary.
It reminds me of a TED talk that I saw.
Oh, okay.
Where they actually really were just with a simple five prong
sensors.
A real breakthrough. Instead of the 20 that an electroencephalograph brain thing, because I'm sure I didn't say that correctly.
An electroencephalograph?
That was what I was trying to get
to. Okay.
Yeah. The one that was in the TED talk was very much more interesting because it was it would allow you to read and do things on the screen. So the initial was, pull that thing towards us, and the guy would think this, and it would come towards him. And then fade it out, which is not expected to be a success, and it sort of starts to fade, and then it succeeds, and the researcher is ecstatic because this guy had only put the helmet on for the first time 40 minutes earlier.
Oh wow!
So this was like that's the settle down period, and then they took a sample of 8 seconds of the standard not thinking about anything much brain, and then so this brain wave reading that seems so impossible is really getting a lot closer than we expected. Now that's reading an actual action. And I think at the time when I wrote about this, I said, oh, I'm thinking trim left.
Oh, yeah. That could get dangerous.
Yeah. Yes. And of course, what was the command when Avid had voice control? Was that everybody mapped, oh, shit, to all stop?
Yeah. Well, do you remember that movie Brainstorm?
I don't directly know, but...
Okay, that was the one Natalie Wood died when they were filming it. Okay,
yep.
That was...
The doesn't float.
You put... Yes, exactly.
Oh, sorry. Too soon?
You put... I don't know. You're going to get me off on a string of jokes that I can't tell. Basically it was they had a helmet you'd put on, and it would record... all the experiences you did, and then somebody else could put the helmet on and play it back, and they experience it. And of course, there was the guy who put the loop on with a loop of orgasm on, and he But this is, kind of that's why this is kind of scary. It starts to make me think of that, does it start affecting
this? From the Mind Play company is take watching a horror movie for example. The more frightened a headsetted viewer becomes during a film, the scarier the ending will be. So they're really only just pulling emotion.
Okay.
Though they can't control each character's precise actions, with Mind Play, viewers can train their brains to better control a movie with each viewing. Now, the interesting thing that all of this brings up is how the heck do you script it?
Yeah, that would be impossible, virtually, because every person's different in how they react and things like that.
We've still got to script the paths that can be shown. I mean, we're not yet at the point where you can think it and have it projected up onto the screen in its full glory. I mean, if that happens, then we're all out of work.
Oh, yeah. but then the problem is, I mean, like, let's say you were able to do that. You're putting their thoughts up on the screen. Well, then they're not getting anything in. I mean, I think that's part of what the problem is with the traditional attempts at interactivity is, when you sit down to watch a movie, it's a passive activity.
Yeah.
Entertain me. I don't want to write
the damn
thing.
And that's exactly why I changed my opinion from thinking that interactive storytelling was going to be the next great thing to, at best, interactivity is going to be customization.
Yes, and that's where I think the three-screen universe works. But you got to have content now on multiple areas that's connected and that, is interconnected in a way that it's spontaneous, and that's heavy-duty stuff, It's like a if you took a well-authored DVD, the promise of the well-authored authored DVD, where you know there were things you could select while you were watching it that would take you off into related facts and all. I mean, that was the concept of it, but you didn't want to do that because you're watching the damn movie. You're not going to like go off to check something else out. But now you'll be able to do that because you can go check something else out and continue watching the movie at the same time. Now, I'm not a fan of this, just so that you know, those of you out there who are like me and believe you can actually watch a movie from front to end and that's how it's meant to be watched, I am not promoting this as a concept. I'm just telling you it's what's happening, and there's big opportunity in it. And if you want a movie that people are going to watch from front to back, you've got to be damn good to keep their attention for that time in this environment.
And frankly, having the second screen in while watching TV is probably my biggest justification for an iPad.
Yeah, I agree.
The phone's a little small for that.
Right.
But the iPad is the – to me, it's a perfect tool for, A, being the remote for the screen. As I said long before all this came up, that the only sensible remote for an internet-driven television or something that has more – that requires more than just up, down, left, right to interact with it, needs to be the second device, the second screen. So, this was before iPads and anything. And they're clearly, that's the way it's going.
Well, yeah, I guarantee you that's where Apple's –
And the whole way that an iPad, and it's an evolving system, but the whole promise of AirPlay is that I can be watching one of these ancillary things on my iPad screen and say, hey, everybody, look, this is really fascinating. Let's go click, and it's on the TV.
Right.
That what you were watching has been suspended. You get this thing that I'm doing, and then go back to what you were doing.
And think about, Oliver Peters, swears that the color correction in Final Cut Pro X is designed for the iPad because it's the way it's designed. He feels it's
flat
designed
rather
for
than round.
So, if you start thinking about that, so you're sitting there doing your color correction or whatever on your iPad, but you're watching it on the TV. I can see, that kind of a universe.
Yep. Because, of course, it's been AirPlayed out of Final Cut 10 to the screen itself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet.
That
technology is not there online, but everything that's on iOS is going to Line. Everything that's on Line is going to iOS. The iOS's are merging, and that's not a secret.
That's
the whole point of Back to the Mac.
Right.
Thank goodness we got AV Foundation as a modern replacement for media playback, replacing QuickTime at the system level, not at the movie level, people. Don't panic. MOV is fine. Old codecs, you'll be playing them back in your old QuickTime player for a while yet. So we got these new technologies.
Yeah. So again, the opportunities here are ginormous, I think. The complexity is above my pay grade at this point. Because it's almost more computer programmer thinking as opposed to the creative part as far as how to tie all the stuff together.
Strangely enough, the original germ of an idea for what became First Cut / the assistant editor, if you know it better as that, was I was working on a documentary. This was before we moved here. Mm-hmm. And I was cutting an emotionally compelling 45-minute story out of the 45 or 50 hours of material that we had. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking while I was doing that, heck, there's an enormous amount of really interesting material that's going to end up on the metaphoric cutting room floor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wouldn't it be great if we could explore that in some sort of reasonable way? And wouldn't it be great if that was actually edited in a halfway decent manner?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the genesis of the Serendipity technology was. It was a way of exploring that material that wasn't included in the editor's and producer's and director's cut, mm-hmm. the one that got released, the 45-minute to an hour and a half or whatever documentary length runs. And that was kind of where the idea hung for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly, metadata is going to be clue. It's going to be absolutely key to this material. So for all of those people who think metadata is boring, I'm sorry, metadata is your future.
It's still boring.
like codecs, it's not. It's
exactly.
It's only a certain type of person who gets excited by it.
Yeah, well, that's not most of us.
It's probably not most.
You're a little
of
different in that section.
I do think though that we're still going to get this customizable, and this is what Mind is as the movie. It's customizable media. It's not interactive. You don't actively have to interact with it. Maybe the media player knows your preferences or knows how the sorts of – knows that I don't like excessive violence, so I'd get the no excessive violence version or no graphic violence version.
So, but this has to then be an individual experience. It's not going to work in a theater.
Well, this one is a theater and they aggregate.
If
the audience is overall getting more terrified or overall getting bored, or I guess if
bored would be helpful.
Yeah.
That would be a good thing to know.
It's out. The audience is getting bored. Let's throw in surprise loop number one.
So, you know, this is totally an aside now, but you've just got me thinking. So if they have that technology to measure that right now, forget the movie. This is, you would think they'd be using this for all the screenings, the test screenings.
Well, yeah.
This would be a blatantly – it's much better than relying on the people to fill out a survey afterwards and try to remember, you know. This way you could just sit there and meter the whole thing and go, okay, that we know 24 minutes in, we got to tighten that up because they got bored.
That would be fabulous, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be fabulous feedback.
Yeah.
I'm not certain that they don't already do something like that. Not with maybe with mind caps, but they certainly do it with looking at people's attention maps. Have you seen these?
Oh, where they watch the eyes?
Yeah, they keep a heat map of where the eye goes in the frame over time. Mm-hmm. And plus, of course, you know, the film industry is by its very nature a conservative industry because of the dollars that are involved.
Right.
So they're less likely to go to trust that over the instinct of a studio.
But they do all. I mean, they do all these screenings,
yeah.
and then they come back and they change something based on a screening, which is really hilarious because they do the screenings like here in Burbank. They do tons of them, right? So they're basing this on an audience of people who are very jaded.
Should be doing it in Southern Carolina or somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. You know, and the higher budget ones do. They go out and do them some other places, but the majority of movies they're just done right here. Boom. Okay. Yeah, that's good enough. Let's go with that. You know,
I tweeted this morning. It was just an interview with the director of The Incredibles. Yeah, Brad Bird says Hollywood isn't brave enough to copy Pixar's process. And the whole thing is really worth reading. It's at the LA Times. It's from a couple of weeks. It's from August the 10th. Everyone in Hollywood says they wish they could do it like Pixar, but they don't. They really don't. There's no secret at Pixar, but there's a belief in letting people pursue something with passion and take chances, and most of Hollywood really doesn't like that. It's too scary. Some studio executive will say that they love obsessive creators who take risks, but really, most of them would rather play it safe and will demolish that passionate movie by the focus group.
Yeah.
And history shows that all of those movies that would have been demolished by focus group are the ones that do set new high watermarks for the industry.
The promise of the consumerized production universe is that we should be seeing more of those things that in the past would have been just squashed, never would have made it to the viewer's eyes, you know?
Well, I think we do. We're just they're not getting the sort of the publicity that they probably deserve or should in getting out to get the message out to people like you. Because I'm seeing some examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not mainstream yet. And, you know, I know that when I talk about stuff being, you know, obsolete or coming up, I'm really... I know within myself I'm really talking 5 to 10 years from now, the trends that I'm talking about. Like, all right, Final Cut 7's dead. No, it's not. Final Cut 7's going to be used in production
for a couple more years at
least.
Yeah.
There'll be people still using it in 10 years.
Not many.
But, I knew somebody
But there'll be some guy. Yeah, you're right.
I know somebody who used Media 100 2.6, which dates from about 1998 right through to about 2006.
Mm-hmm.
On the same piece of hardware. It was obsolete when she bought that system, and it remained obsolete for the entire time she used it. I mean, obsolete Final Cut systems, Final Cut 7 systems will still be in use.
Yeah, well, but there's a little bit of difference with the Media 100 because you had a bigger investment financially in it.
That's true, in those days, particularly.
Now people used to disposable. What, yours is 2 years old? Throw it away.
You need a new
one, you know?
Well, 2 years is the sweet spot, I think, with a Mac.
That's pretty much.
2 years, sell it. It's still got some value.
Yeah.
Buy the next generation at that point. It's long enough that there is a performance distinction, particularly in laptops. I have really, and this is a complete aside, but I've really been surprised the difference that 18 months has made between the 17-inch MacBook Pro that is my own and the 17-inch MacBook Pro that Apple loaned me for the Final Cut Pro 10 review back in June. And that screams. I mean, okay, it has SSD.
Mm-hmm.
My laptop takes about a minute to launch Final Cut Pro 10. It launches in 10 seconds on that computer.
Wow.
You know, it's quad i7, not a dual core 2 Duo. It's got hyper-threading, so it's got 8 virtual cores. I've pushed Final Cut Pro 10 up to 740% processor load with background rendering. And so... that's the sweet point, is to turn it over in that time. But that's got absolutely nothing to do with transmedia.
No,
it isn't. Just to try and keep us on this topic. This is probably the largest challenge to transmedia is also the fact that it is an opportunity for the industry, is that if you are going to produce all of this ancillary material, a budget has to be found to produce it, or we have to rob budget from the primary program.
Okay.
And that's probably a less attractive. So if this is not producing income on its own right, then it's not going to be... happening ever because we're driving up the costs possibly 2, 3, 4, 5-fold. Mm-hmm. And if we're not going to drive up the revenue similarly, at least somewhat comparably, then we're just simply creating a block that we've tied around our neck and sitting on a boat about to jump off, because we're only signing our own death warrant doing that. More work, less money. Not a good thing.
Yes, yeah.
So let's not exacerbate that trend.
Yeah.
Because transmedia, if you're developing a game, you know, game development takes time.
Yeah.
Gameplay
takes
time.
Yeah, but they make money.
Well, not always. Not always if it's an ancillary part to a show.
Oh,
I mean,
a lot of
games are created that are ancillary to television shows, that they're only really single purpose. Disney. I mean, Disney do a massive amount of this stuff in their Penguin Club.
Do they make any money on that? I thought they were.
Disney Interactive is
profitable.
They were
hurting, right? Aren't they?
Well,
I don't know.
Digital Interactive was doing okay.
But you know, my son works at Blizzard.
Yeah. Right?
They make World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
That's like having a license to print money.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Except games companies have gone under in the last year, so you've got to have the hit game.
These guys aren't, because the trick to their universe is it's the, you know, multiplayer interactive thing. And so they make back all of their R&D money on the sales of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're paying $15 a month times all the subscribers around the planet. And that's why I say it's a license to print money.
Yeah. The interesting thing about all of these is, if I want to tie a trend up between transmedia and what's been happening in other outlets,
mm-hmm.
I'm looking at GigOn from yesterday. Memo to newspapers: the future of media is a two-way street. So even
what do they mean?
Well,
it's feedback about going back to them?
Yes, it's the way the better news sites do work, and these are not news sites that are associated with newspapers, but.
Mm-hmm.
But the better news sites...
You mean where they allow comments, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But comments and correction and expansion of the story by...
Oh, okay, so it's like a Wikipedia.
But so, I mean, it's story comments, but it's the better newspapers actively seek those comments, respond to them,
mm-hmm.
Link to the sources. Newspapers are extremely bad at linking to their sources, frequently ripping off online research and claiming as their own without any credit. I mean, to me... Because these same newspapers are absolutely draconian when it goes the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, there's this total hypocrisy in there. But that's, again, a distraction. The thing that's in common is that it's a much tighter connection between the audience and the producer. This has been something that TechDirt has been talking about in terms of funding independent projects. It's the connection with your fans,
yes.
Then providing them with something of value to make money. It's that connection with the fans.
See, we should have... For this show, would be, you know, the perfect world would be some kind of integration like that, because what I keep hearing from people who listen, they go, you know, I was listening to the show and I wanted to say, rah, 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 you know, and they, you know, and I'm like, well, go post comments, but then they don't do it, because that's after they don't care anymore at that point, you know.
The time between the show and feeling irate, just it's like, by the time you get to do anything about it, it's like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
And the nature of the way people listen to podcasts,
that's the other part. If they get the podcast
in the car, or they get it, they're listening in the, you know. Digital production buzz was very big amongst lawn mowing or snow blowing as a way of distracting oneself doing those household chores.
Yeah, I think we're the commuter show.
The commuter show. You know, that's the other place where people do listen, and certainly.
How's that traffic going, folks?
Pay attention.
But, yeah, it would be nice to, you know, figure out a way to do that kind of thing.
Most of those people who are doing this connect with fans have a much tighter connection with their fan base, and therefore can monetize that fan base far better than the big act or the studio or the record company-led artist of the past, who really, you know, the interaction with the fan was, well, somebody will respond to letters in the fan club, or somebody's supposed to be in charge of the fan club, but it's not really any way integrated with the artist or the band. Closely. And I think Warner Brothers Records have been doing a lot of opening up their band sites. Ethan Kaplan, when he was head of technology there, did a lot to open up their websites to be band websites, much more fan-friendly.
Oh, okay.
And so much more interaction from the fans. Because his history was starting a fan site. At 15 for, I think, REM. So the whole trend is in every piece of media, in news, in music, in television... Film is probably its own thing, but in television, you could get more feedback and more allow the audience to participate more. And that's what the whole point of the goals of transmedia are, is to allow the audience to participate more. And, of course, when you participate, you have more ownership. So the show should, in theory, do better because people want it to continue and want to consume it and become part of it.
So is that going to happen to us?
I think so. I mean, certainly in the television side. Film is its own thing. I draw a very clear distinction between film and television. I mean, film was originally designed a film
you
piece.
You mean features, theatrical release features.
Features. I should probably be even more specific.
Yeah.
Something designed to be watched in a dark room with other people, as opposed to something intended to be watched in your lounge room,
right,
by yourself or with other people, right, and treated.
It's a different audience.
McLuhan would say it's a whole different media.
Yeah, it is
because of the context. But the trend is that it's all going to be about more involvement for the audience in whatever we do. And I think the better TV shows are already doing it. They have, you know, participation from the producers in forums so that people can ask questions.
Right.
Not only you don't have to wait for the big event.
Mm-hmm.
I got seriously trodden on when I queued up after an event to try and ask Matthew Weiner why all the camera angles in Mad Men were so low. And he said, so we can show off the ceiling because we're shooting it in an office.
Does
that make it look real?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good point.
I said, no, I've been wondering that for years. He said, well, you could have gone over to the forums any time and asked it.
Ah.
Like, of course I could have. I just am not yet mentally
thinking that way,
and it's clearly it's partly me that's got to catch up,
right? Yeah, because the younger generation does think that way now.
So whatever the future of media is, it's going to be more audience participation, television, be that news or other media. It's the audience, the people formerly known as the audience are now known as the participants.
Interesting. And if you're creating product for those people to watch and you want it to look better and sound better, bring it on over to alphadogs.tv and we will take care of you.
And if you want to explore the use of our serendipity technology for transmedia purposes, certainly contact me, philip@intelligentassistance.com. But in the meantime, if you're involved in post-production and you want to take some of the boring out of that, check out our various applications for Final Cut Pro 7 and Final Cut Pro 10 at assistededediting.com, and check out my blog at philiphodgetts.com, where I rant on and point to interesting things pretty much daily.